Good afternoon. Welcome to the Tuesday, March 1st, 2022, 5:30 P.M., Tompkins County Legislature Meeting. Please join us for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
Flag, the United States of America.
Thank you. Roll call of members.
Henry Grandison.
Present.
Rich Johns.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Greg Mezzi.
Here.
Veronica Pillar.
Here.
Lee Shirtless. Mike Sigler. Travis Brooks. Randy Brown.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
We have 12 members present.
Thank you. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. We do have one proclamation this evening for Women's History Month. I'd like to start off by reading that. Whereas in 1978, the School District of Sonoma, California, participated in Women's History Week, an event designed around the week of March 8th, International Women's Day, which was a precursor for Women's History Month, and whereas Women's History Month is a celebration of women's contributions to history, culture, and society, and has been observed annually in the month of March in the United States since 1987, and whereas COVID-19 has compounded the challenges for women throughout the world, especially for women in the workforce, in addition to the heavier role of women in childcare and elder care, the uptick in domestic violence and the preponderance of women in service and other public-facing jobs, COVID-19 has slowed the progress of gender equity and inclusion, and whereas the 2022 Women's History Month theme is Women Providing, Healing, Promoting Hope, as a tribute to the ceaseless work of caregivers and frontline workers during this ongoing pandemic, and also recognition of the thousands of ways that women of all cultures have provided both healing and hope throughout history, and whereas women have served as early leaders in the forefront of every major progressive social change movement to create a more fair and just society for all, despite their treatment as second-class citizens and denial of the full rights and privileges that are available to male citizens of the United States, and whereas we can all choose to challenge and call out gender bias and inequity, and whereas President John F. Kennedy signed the Equal Pay Act into law in 1963, prohibiting sex-based wage discrimination between men and women performing the same job in the same workplace, and President Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law in 1964, which banned employment discrimination based on race, religion, national origin, or sex. And whereas women here and elsewhere continue to unite to advocate that these rights and privileges be available to all residents equally, and whereas this year the Tompkins County Historical Commission we'll celebrate the rich history of women to honor multiple women, including local women who have played a key role in the movement through several exhibits, including Breaking Barriers, Women's Lives and Livelihoods, which explores the lives of women in public and private spheres around the centuries, and whereas the diversity of women of every race, ethnicity, religion, age, sexual orientation, national origin, disability status, protected veteran status, and expression should be honored and uplifted. And whereas women throughout history have demonstrated an unbreakable resolve in pursuit of justice, equity, and inclusion, now therefore I, Shauna Black, chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim that the Tompkins County Legislature celebrates the brave women who fought to win suffrage, civil and economic rights for women, and designate the month of March 2022 to celebrate Women's History Month. In witness whereof, I, Shauna Black, have hereunto set my hand and caused to be affixed the great seal of Tompkins County, State of New York, on this first day of March 2022. Are there any comments from anyone, any legislator? Okay. Oh, Mike Lane?
I like that proclamation, and I like the fact that there's talk in New York State, at least at the state level, of the Equal Rights Amendment again.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, let's move on to announcements of executive sessions. We will have an executive session this evening for the cause of litigation, and we will not be taking action. Let's open it up to privilege of the floor. We have two people that have signed up for privilege of the floor. First is Hannah Whaler. I would like to read the rules for speaking under the privilege of the floor first. An individual may speak no longer than 3 minutes. A speaker will not raise their voice. A speaker will not use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite or breach of the peace. A speaker will not speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about job performances of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, a speaker will leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. A speaker will not cause a disruption, and if asked to leave, will leave the chambers. Since we are currently allowing for people to do public comment via Zoom, we also have some other rules that we would like to establish. Members of the public are invited to attend virtually to participate in privilege of the floor. You will be promoted as a panelist to provide remarks, and when done, you will be removed from the meeting by the host. You are then invited to watch the meeting on the county's YouTube channel. And first up, we have Hannah Whaler.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good evening. My name is Hannah Whaler. I'm the Central New York Program Coordinator for Citizens Campaign for the Environment. Thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment tonight in support of two municipal resolutions, the first being the resolution calling on the state to pass the Birds and Bees Protection Act. Put simply, the Birds and Bees Protection Act will eliminate the unnecessary uses of neonicotinoid pesticides, which pose a high risk to pollinators but have little to no benefit to users. Neonics have been largely linked to massive bee losses across the country, across the state. Just one neonic-treated corn seed has enough active ingredient to kill over 250,000 bees. Since their introduction about 15 years ago, New York agriculture has become 48 times more toxic to insect life. And since neonics do not know the difference between a pest and a beneficial insect, we're experiencing losses here in New York, with beekeepers losing 53% of their colonies last year, which is the second highest loss rate on record. Furthermore, they're very good at contaminating our entire ecosystem. They're designated and designed to permeate the entire plant, making everything from the roots to the fruit a pesticide and toxic to insects. Unfortunately, when applied as a seed coating, only about 2 to 5% is actually absorbed by the plant. The other 95%+ remains in the soil where it persists for years. Or anytime it rains or is irrigated, the pesticide makes its way into our groundwater where it contaminates neighboring wells or drinking water sources. Conventional water treatment does not remove neonics. So anytime you turn on the tap, if your water source is contaminated, you will be having neonics coming out of the tap. This is seen with CDC monitoring, where we're finding 50% of Americans have neonics in their body at any given day. So this bill is based on the Cornell report that came out in 2020. It looked over 1,100 different peer-reviewed studies, and it revealed that neonic-treated corn, soybean, and wheat seeds, as well as ornamental uses, was the highest risk to benefit to pollinators, but they provide no net income benefit to their users or farmers. Just by banning these simple uses, we will eliminate 85 to 90% of all neonics used in the state. And that's exactly what the Birds and Bees Protection Act does. This will have a tremendous effect on our water quality, our pollinators, and our farmers who rely on pollinators. So we urge the Tompkins County Legislature to pass this resolution. It sends a clear message that New York must act now to stop the overuse of the toxic pesticide. And very quickly, I just briefly wanted to express my support for the municipal resolution regarding extended producer responsibility. Currently, manufacturers bear no responsibility for disposing of their packaging waste. Large brands have externalized this cost of disposal and put it onto our municipal recycling programs and taxpayers. EPR would require manufacturers to take responsibility for the product's entire life cycle by bearing the cost of proper recycling and disposal. This not only provides relief to taxpayers, but also incentivizes producers to minimize packaging materials, improve recyclability, and reduce toxicity of their products. From the city of Buffalo to New York City, and even large brands such as Pepsi and Coke are all supporting New York's EPR legislation. Now, Tompkins County can join them by passing this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah, for joining us for your comment. Next, we have Zachary Nguyen.
Zachary's not on mute on Zoom at the moment.
Okay. Well, if Zachary joins us later, he is able to do his 3 minutes. Also, I want to let others know that for our next meeting, March 15th, we will allow people in our chambers to come for public comment. We welcome the public to either come in person. We will still have Zoom available, and you can also email legislators through our website.
Our next legislature meeting will be March 17th, not the 15th.
Oh, sorry. I'm behind a little bit. Rich John?
Somebody was just in the chat saying they're here.
Oh, they were under a different name. Okay, that must be Zach. Sorry.
Same picture.
Hi, Zach. Sorry.
Hello, yes. I had somebody else using my Zoom account. Good evening. I'm glad the masks are finally gone. That has gone on far too long. And, I've been saying this for months and months, and now that the polls have caught up, with you folks, I'm glad that's finally getting rolled back. It was totally unreasonable. And it needs to be gotten off the public transportation, specifically the TCAT. I have heard about their recruiting difficulties. And, having to be the mask cops on top of wearing a mask all day while driving a bus, that's just extra layers of unnecessary difficulty on an already stressful job. The chair of the legislature, I saw your editorial about Ukraine, and I was glad to see that. I was curious if the legislature would feel comfortable making a similar statement about the Uyghurs in China. There's a genocide widely acknowledged that has gone on there for many years. And, with near 400,000 Cornell students in China, actually, and an ongoing genocide, I'm hoping that maybe as a community that benefits financially from the money coming from China, from those students, that it might be wise to, take a stance on such a serious issue, especially with, the situation in Ukraine making the possible invasion of Taiwan in the mid to near term much more likely. And I'm hoping that there will be a similar proclamation from the legislature if and when China invades Taiwan. The looming announcement about the police reform in the city of Ithaca seems to be priming people for a rather dramatic change to how law enforcement is handled. There's recently an op-ed written by a transplant from D.C., a woman by the name of Alana, who worked for the young electeds in D.C., is now lobbying on behalf of the police reform in the Ithaca Voice before it has even really been announced. And I find that very odd. And I'd like to remind many members of the legislature voted for this police reform, and I'm curious if, when you did that, if you were aware that the meetings would be closed to the public since last August when they started, and the individual members of the committee, including Mr. Travis Brooks on the legislature, have been asked to not speak publicly about what goes on with that committee. And I'm curious if you think that is in line with the goals of transparency that are so crucial to making the effort appear legitimate. Thank you very much, and I yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Zachary. Next, it is time for municipal officials. And is George McGonigal on this evening? No, he is not. Do we see any other municipal officials?
George may try to join us a little bit. In a little bit, I'm not sure. He emailed me.
Okay. Well, if he joins later, then we are certainly always happy to hear from George. Now let's open it up for legislator privilege of the floor. Mike Lane.
Madam Chair, before I start, I wondered if you would, and if you were planning to read the statement that you issued. I think that would be a very appropriate thing to do.
Certainly.
And then I would like to speak about that topic.
Yes, let me just, you know what, if you would like to speak about the topic and I will find the statement.
Right. I wanted to speak about the Ukraine war that's going on. Despite the efforts of most of the Western democracies and other democracies around the world, we've seen Vladimir Putin and the Russian government invade its neighboring country of Ukraine. Rockets and shells and tanks and trucks and airplanes and all of it. And we've seen, we know that the people of Ukraine are there defending their democracy. And they didn't possibly believe that this was going to happen, but it did. I couldn't help thinking about one of my very, very earliest impressions of something going on in the world. It was back when I was actually 6 years old, and it was the Hungarian Revolution, which was crushed by the Soviet Union. And that was a precursor to the Cold War that went on for many, many years. We need to stand in solidarity with the people of Ukraine. We aren't fools. We know that Russia has nuclear weapons aimed at us, just like we have nuclear weapons aimed at it. It's deterrence at the nuclear level. And we don't want to have World War III, even if they do. We have many Ukrainian Americans, Ukrainian visitors here in Tompkins County, in New York State, and across the nation. We're proud of them. We're proud that they came here to share in our democracy with us, to get educated, to raise a family, to return home, whatever was their desire to do. I read that there are a lot of transplants here that are finding their way back to help defend their country right now. This is serious. This is a serious thing. I hope that we can get the word out, and I really want to thank our chair, Shauna Black, for the statement that was put out today, showing our solidarity. And I would like very much for us to display the flag of the Ukraine sovereign nation on our community flagpole at the front of our chambers to show that solidarity of this time. And I'm hopeful that our chair will permit that. And frankly, we don't have a lot of Ukrainian flags. We will have one, and we will display it. And it will be a symbol. I guess I've gone on long enough, but this really bothers me a lot, what's going on over in that part of the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. And we are certainly in the process of trying to obtain a Ukrainian flag, and we will be doing that hopefully in the next week or so. I will read the statement. The Tompkins County Legislature stands with the people of Ukraine. The unwarranted aggression by the Russian leadership and military against the people of Ukraine is an attack against the Ukrainian people's right to an independent, democratic sovereignty. We denounce the invasion and hope for a more peaceful resolution to this crisis and an end to the senseless killing and displacement. We express our support for the Ukrainian Americans in Tompkins County and New York State. In Tompkins County, we have a proud tradition of inviting, welcoming, and including immigrants and refugees, and will continue to do so for Ukrainians as we stand with our Ukrainian brothers and sisters at this most difficult time. So thank you for adding to that. I'll just pipe in here. The other night I was tucking my 10-year-old into bed, and he has a way of sneaking into our bed every night. And he started talking about how they were discussing the war in his fourth grade class. And he looked at me and he said, "Why are they doing that?" And we talked a little bit about that. And then the next question he asked were, "Are kids like me being killed?" And I was taken aback that a 10-year-old little boy understands the impacts of war and is trying to wrap his mind around what is going on the other part of the world. Our kids, our families have gone through so much over the past 2 years dealing with a pandemic, and now you turn the news on and we're faced with war and famine and genocide. And it's hard for many of us to see the light at the end of the tunnel. As a parent, I worry for my children. I wonder what is going to happen. There is a crazy person that is dictating what Russia is doing. And I very much so worry that this person could make the wrong decision and really put us all at risk. So, with that said, I hate to be a downer this evening, but we will continue to support our community. We will continue to support our Ukrainian Americans that are residing here in Tompkins County. And most of all, we need to remember to continue to be kind and gracious to each other, because we're all going through a hard time right now. So, privilege of the floor for legislators. Veronica.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On a different topic, I wanted to share that the newly elected legislators again have been meeting with more department heads and staff since our last meeting, and so I want to extend a big thank you to those folks: Highway Department, Facilities, Department of Social Services, and our wonderful public library. And then I also got to go on two different ride-alongs in the last 2 weeks, and I wanted to report back from that. On Friday, when there was snow, I rode along on a snowplow, which was fantastic, partly from the, like, you know, little kid, big truck excitement level. But also I'm just really impressed with the care that our county highway department takes for our roads. I got to, Luke, the snowplow operator, was patient in me asking questions for multiple hours about all sorts of stuff. And one thing that really stuck out was sort of the, like, personal and specific care they take to things. Like, he was talking about the cutting trees on the side of the road and checking in with property owners to, you know, keep up good relationships there before doing stuff. The way they make their decisions about who does what to keep up morale in the department. At some point plowing the roads, we stopped and he, like, got off and used a shovel just to dig out this one, like, little bit of a ditch, because you have to use, like, specific attention to keep, in this case, like, water from flooding the road and turning to ice. And I just want to commend them for that and thank them. And then the previous week, I went on a ride along with the sheriff's department with Deputy, I think soon to be Sergeant Federation, and Sergeant Davenport, one after the other. Also, thanks to them for answering my questions for hours. And one thing, a couple takeaways from that. One, I think I've, in general, made it no secret that I'd like policing to be a smaller part of our society than it currently is. But as long as we have it and are calling them to respond to things, I really appreciate an overarching piece of what I saw the Sheriff's Department do, which is really lead with connecting to person and lead with de-escalation. I think we heard Sheriff Osborne talk about that, like, and I think one of the deputies or one of the sergeants was talking about, like, your first tactic or, like, approach to a situation is just your voice, talking to a person like you would your neighbor and be like, hey, are you okay? What's going on? And, you know, I wish all law enforcement institutions did that. And then secondly, this is not news, but something that really stuck out was how much mental health crises were a part of the things the Sheriff Department gets called for. It was a reasonably quiet night when I rode along, although with some mental health crises. So I got to hear a lot of stories about other times. And one thing, I think Sergeant Davenport said that for sure most of the calls, at least the ones that involved people, involved mental health issues. And that it wasn't, and that they keep coming back to the same places again and again. And that multiple times they've had something like they get called to come to someone having a mental health crisis. The Sheriff's Department deals with it like as best they can within their purview. And then a few hours later get called again for the same person, same night, like mental health disaster again. And so I think that really speaks to the need. And the Sheriff's staff, they were upfront that like they aren't medical professionals. Like they're often the first responders because that's who people call. But it really speaks to that we need way, way more mental health support in our community, pre-crisis, responding to crisis, long-term care. There's just so many holes in that system. You know, it's hard to begin addressing it, but I think also it's like it is our mandate to put a lot more resources into that. And this is not to knock the support we have. I know, like, in particular, they spoke really highly of the mobile crisis team out of the mental health department. I think the people doing this work are doing great, but we just need so much more. Thanks.
Veronica, thank you. I also did a ride-along about 6 months ago, and from my 4 years on the legislature, I can honestly say that was one of the most eye-opening experiences that I had. And also the funnest because, you know, we went 95 down Route 13, which I thought was really cool. But it was so incredible to see our deputies out there really treating absolutely everyone that they encountered with respect and dignity. And you just saw that the real personable communication. I mean, it was really profound. And for all of the legislators, I would encourage you to ask the sheriff to see if you could do a ride-along. I think it's important for everyone. Any other questions from legislators or comments? Privilege of the floor.
George McGonigal is with us.
Oh, okay. George McGonigal, welcome to the legislature.
Thanks, Shauna. I had a lot of trouble in. I was here at 5:30, but I couldn't get in. I want to thank Veronica and Shauna for their comments just now. I, too, have done some ride-alongs recently, including a plow truck, and I have to say the city staff, both at DPW and in Ithaca Police Department, treat people with respect and they're careful, and they use conversational, friendly language, and it's good. It makes me proud of both the guys who drive the trucks and the cops who patrol the streets. Speaking of which, tomorrow at our council meeting, the task force that has been putting together recommendations for reimagining the police will bring their recommendations to council, and then the fun begins. So there's that. I also wanted to tell you about the Northside apartments that are going to be torn down and then rebuilt. It's been discovered that in order to completely electrify the new buildings and take them away from fossil fuels, natural gas, it's going to cost considerably more money up front. And so the city has agreed to fund an additional $100,000 to the Community Housing Development Fund to help pay for that and to avoid any further delays on the project, because people have moved out and they want to move back in as soon as possible. And it's my understanding that the county has agreed to pony up an additional $40,000 in that effort. So I wanted to thank you all for that. That's all I've got.
Any questions for George? Dan Klein?
Just so you know, George, we haven't voted on that yet, but soon.
Tonight. Oh, okay. Well, I hope I don't have to take that thank you back.
Any other questions for George? Greg Muzzy?
Hi, George. Thanks for the update. Are your meetings back open to the public or only on Zoom still?
We're Zooming it still.
Do you have any idea when you'd be open back up in chambers?
I do not, but I hope soon. I don't like to Zoom. I'm not good at it, obviously.
I didn't want to say anything.
Any other questions for George? Okay, George, we were pretty nice to you tonight. Thanks for joining us. Have a good night.
Thank you. Yep, you too.
Okay, let's go back to legislator privilege of the floor. I have Dan Klein and then Rich John.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In our county, there are a number of people that, and a number of locations that do not have good cell phone reception, particularly in the hilly parts of the county, particularly in the southern half of the county. And I'm glad to say that as of today, our information technologies department went live with a website, a small web-based survey. So I just want to tell you briefly about it. There'll be more formal publicity coming. There'll be a link on our homepage, or you can access it directly by going to TompkinsCountyNewYork.gov/cellsurvey. There's three simple questions on there. It's very straightforward. It asks where you live or where you're reporting from, who your cell phone company is, and on a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate your cell phone reception? And what we hope to do with this information is generate a more accurate map of where cell phone reception is lacking in this county. Because if you look at the official federal government maps, they basically say the entire county is covered, and we know that's not true. So, again, there's more publicity coming, and we're going to ask as many residents as possible to fill out the survey. That's going to generate this map. And then we'll take that information and do what we can with it. We don't know, you know, it's not an easy problem to solve, but the first step in solving it is to identify the extent of the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Could you just repeat that website one more time?
Dominic, am I okay saying it without the two?
Yeah, it should work without the two.
Yeah, it worked for me. Okay. It's TompkinsCountyNewYork.gov/cellsurvey.
Do we have a press release that maybe we can get out to spread the word?
That is the plan.
Okay.
I plan to send it this week.
That's great. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Dan, for working on that. Rich John?
I didn't raise my hand.
Oh, sorry. Anyone else for privilege of the floor? make sure I have our... Okay, I see no other hands. Let's move on to the chair's report. I just wrote up a little short something. A lot has changed so far this year, and I want to share some thoughts on the pandemic and how we manage our risk and take care of ourselves and one another as we move forward, and on how we can be courteous and kind as a community. As of Monday, the local mask advisory was lifted by our health department. This has been in place since last July when our cases began to rise with the Delta variant, and we're in a much different place now. I've seen many critics of the health department on Facebook say that it's too soon. I've also seen many people on the opposite end of the spectrum saying that we should have done this 6 months ago. Our hospitalizations are far lower, our vaccination rate is higher, and the spread of new cases has slowed down. This doesn't mean we will never see another mask advisory or masks again in the future if the situation changes. I'd also remind us all that other COVID guidance is still important. Testing and vaccination are other tools that can keep us safe. I want to be clear. Masks have saved lives in Tompkins County. We've seen from our contact tracing that masks stop the spread in many situations and gatherings. The KN95 masks that we're distributing freely help not only to protect others, but can provide added protection from COVID-19. We don't know if there will be other variants we need to be protected from in the future. The journey is not guaranteed to be a straight path. In fact, we are trending towards endemic, but we all know that there could be hiccups along the way and we could have to take safety measures again. Just because we do not have a mask advisory or mandate does not mean that everyone will feel comfortable going maskless. It doesn't mean that you can't continue to wear a mask, and in no way should there be a stigma of people who choose to continue to wear a mask. We don't know a stranger's story. The gentleman behind you at the Ithaca Bakery could be wearing a mask because his wife is getting chemo. The lady at Wegmans could be wearing a mask because her baby is in the NICU fighting for his life, and she has to protect him. We need to be courteous to one another and respect the precautions each other takes to keep ourselves and our families healthy. We've lost 59 of our neighbors in Tompkins County and grieve for every life lost. We can still do things together to prevent further loss of life and other devastating impacts from this pandemic. Ongoing thanks is due to our staff for their tireless efforts managing the COVID-19 pandemic response. I also wanted to acknowledge that March is Women's History Month, a yearly celebration of achievements and contributions that women have made on our society. This year's theme, again, is Women Providing Healing and Promoting Health. I encourage legislators and our community to think about the work of caregivers and frontline workers who have led us, navigating through this pandemic and the countless ways that women from all backgrounds have provided both hope and healing to us all. Thank you. Okay. Next, we have Lisa Holmes, who is the interim what is your position, Lisa? Sorry about that.
County administrator. Sometimes I don't know either.
Welcome, Lisa Holmes. Happy to have you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So tonight I have three items under my report, including a reimagining public safety update and a COVID update. But I'd like to first start with a very exciting update, which is I'm very pleased to be recommending to you tonight to the legislature Rosemary Avila for confirmation as Tompkins County's next Workforce Development Board director. And I believe Rosemary is with us this evening via Zoom as well. So to provide you with a little bit of brief background, Rosemary has served as the interim director of workforce development since August of 2021, and she's done a great job for us. She's led the Workforce Development Board and engaged with partners and key stakeholders. She brings valuable experience as a previous coordinator of workforce programs. She has public and private sector management experience as well as nonprofit experience. She's worked in multicultural environments with the State Department. And previously, I had sent you her credentials for your review. We convened an interview panel back in January of this year, consisting of the past and current president of the Workforce Development Board. We had our own chair of the PDEQ committee, liaison from Cornell, the county department heads, as well as administration and HR staff, who recommended Rosemary, and that recommendation was taken to the Workforce Development Board for their bylaws for a vote on February 22nd, where she received unanimous support. So I am now bringing both the Workforce Development Board's recommendation and my recommendation to you for formal confirmation by the legislature. And one more piece of information, the waiver for her position as relocate to Tompkins County. So I'm bringing that to you for your consideration and your appointment confirmation.
Thank you, Lisa. And can I have someone to move Rosemary's employment? Deborah Dawson would move, and Corman would second. I would also like to offer that if we need to have discussion based on questions or concerns that have to do with personnel issues, that we can go to executive session if anyone would like to do so. Okay. Any questions or comments?
Donna, do you want to do the residency waiver separately, or do you want to do it as part of?
Is everyone fine doing it together?
Then I would move that as well.
Okay. Thank you. Randy?
Yes, I have a question on the residency waiver. What happens if, for some reason, she doesn't move?
Lisa, would you be able to answer that?
Sure. I could come back and make the legislature aware of that. We could choose to extend the waiver at that point if there's an issue. If that would help to accommodate the process.
Sure, she will, but it's hard to find a place to live, you know.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, let's do a roll call vote.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Dan Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dossett?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Great. We would like to welcome you, Rosemary.
Welcome to Tompkins County.
Would you like to say a few words?
Thank you for the opportunity.
Would you like to say a few words?
Sure. Well, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for the trust and confidence. It's a challenge, but nonetheless fun and exciting to take every day, especially serving our community and our job seekers and our businesses. So I look forward to doing that in a permanent role. And I want to thank the Tompkins County administration and everyone that has helped me in this transition. So thank you very much for all your help and support.
Thank you. We're very happy to have you. Congratulations. Okay. Lisa, do you have any other announcements to make for us?
I do. Next up, I wanted to welcome Mona Lita Smiley, our Community Justice Center Project Director. Also wanted to acknowledge our city partner, Shelley Michelle Nunn, is here with us tonight. And I did want to mention, it's already been mentioned, Again, that tomorrow night, the Ithaca Common Council is going to be unveiling and discussing recommendation number one in the Reimagining Public Safety Plan. And while this recommendation pertains to the city as a partner in the reimagining process, we support them as they consider the recommendations of their working group. But I would like to now turn it over to Mona for her reimagining update.
Ready. Thank you, Lisa. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen so that I can give you some visuals with our update, if that's okay. Come on. Got to get it to work with me. There we go. So our charge came from the New York State Executive Order 203. It's centered around communities of color. You know, we're doing the local reimagining plans that were passed by the city and the county in April of 2021. These plans are inclusive to be collaborative, a collaboration between Imagining Public Safety, create and implement the Community Justice Center, which we're off to a pretty good start because I'm still sitting there. And we are working on the hiring of the other staff members. So once again, we're located on the second floor of the mental health building. What we're up to at the Community Justice Center right now is that we're recruiting for a data analysis. So we reopened the search so that I could be a part of that. We'll be taking applications until the end of March and then begin review process and then interviewing. We are building community connections with LEAD, CLOCK, and engaging with a lot of community partners, though. And we are also working with Southside Community Center for Mosaic with the Black Pearl Alchemy Project. That mosaic will be located in our conference room over at the mental health building. It's probably going to be about a 10-week project, so, you know, more updates to come as that gets started in the process. I'll definitely share. It's been mentioned a couple of times this evening already. The City of Ithaca report will be presented tomorrow evening at Common Council, and that will include suggestions for the department's redesign. Other plans that we're working on or continuing is we'll intersect with the city implementation as appropriate. So that's the alternative response plan, community healing plan, the Tompkins County Sheriff's Office pilot program. Plans that we have in progress right now is the collaborative plans with community healing plans. So we have sessions with the Black and Brown communities, and we are working with law enforcement, just getting started with them to work on a community healing plan for them also. So that includes Ithaca Police Department and the Sheriff's Department. Another collaborative is the alternative response wraparound health and human service delivery. So we're in the process of reviewing the sequential mapping report with mental health, the sheriff's office, and other municipalities. We're also identifying opportunities to expand work with the LEAD program and to outline the process that will initiate a research study for the alternative wraparound plan. Another plan in progress is the Tompkins County Sheriff's Department's unarmed pilot program. So we are in the process of reviewing applications for the civilian positions, which there was a significant amount of applications for that. And then also still assess the call heights and processing system review for the operationalization of that. What's next? We are diligently working on establishing a CJC advisory board. So our report recommendations will be due at the end of March. And we are continuing our communications with supporting other villages and towns. So in the coming weeks, we'll be hosting some type of interactions, communications, and discussions with some of the surrounding towns and villages. That's what I have for you this evening. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mona Lita, for your presentation. Deborah Dawson?
Yes, thanks, Mona. Could you explain what the sequential mapping thing is all about? Because I have no idea.
I'm going to call and Deanna to help me out figure this one out, how to explain it, because I did a lot of research on it and we'll work on it today, but I'm still learning.
Sure. That's why we are buddies in this process, along with the City of Ithaca. The sequential mapping report, as a result of the grant that we received several months ago, I mentioned that the Mental Health Department, the Sheriff's Office, and County Administration submitted a grant. I received crisis intervention training. A part of that grant, that means we had Ithaca Police Department, we had nonprofits there, we had the Sheriff's Office, other folks from throughout the criminal justice system, had a day session to identify where the pain points and challenges are. And from there, their report was produced, called the Sequential Mapping Report, which essentially identifies when you go into the system, where are the issues and things of that nature. It was a continuation of the initial study that was held in 2019, and that is the basis for many of our discussions around crisis intervention that will be used to launch our wraparound health and human service delivery process. So again, it's a report that is an update from 2019 that we've been working collaboratively on.
Thank you.
Sure.
Ms. Sean?
I would just add, it's an unfortunate term, but the full thing is sequential intercept mapping. And the idea is to walk somebody through their entry into the criminal justice system and how they move through it and out. So in sequence, where do you intercept them and bring them into others away from the criminal justice system?
Thanks, Rich.
Yeah, but it's begging for a better title.
So am I.
Any other questions for Mona or comments? Okay, I see none. Thank you so much, Mona and Deanna, for joining us. And Lisa, do you have any other announcements?
Last but not least, we have a brief COVID update, and I'm going to turn it over to Amy Hendricks for that, Deputy County Administrator.
Right. Thanks, Lisa. I am doing this solo tonight for the first time since March 2020. Frank Krupa is away today, so we will run through these updates and maybe we'll do it a little more briefly than before. Since we last met, we have seen four deaths since that last time, so four more community residents that we've lost. And thank you, Shauna, for acknowledging how challenging those deaths are for our community throughout all of this. We continue to receive some positive self-test results, as well as the test results that are coming in. We've had an increase of 375 cases since the last time we met. Since then, the governor has announced the change within the mask mandate. The CDC has changed and updated their guidance regarding the different levels of transmission, and our county staff have participated in distribution of 250,000 KN95 masks and 28,000 self-test kits. At this time, I think there's still about 20,000 KN95 masks that we're working into distributing, but all of the test kits have been given out into our community. We're very thankful for all our community partners who have helped us do this. Our libraries have held multiple community events, as well as our nonprofits who provided these to all that they serve, and our municipal governments have also helped out. So we have made sure that our employees and our community members all have the resources that they need. The biggest change, as the chair mentioned in the beginning remarks, was the change in the mask mandate, and that has also impacted our county operations as we've lifted our directive. So when entering our buildings, with the exception of those buildings that house transportation providers, healthcare facilities, or corrections, as well as there's a couple others, but those pertain to us, we have lifted that mask mandate. People can continue to still wear those masks and are encouraged to do so. We've talked often about the Swiss cheese approach to preventing COVID-19, which is multi-layered, and the more layers you have, the better the prevention mechanism. And so things like vaccines, washing hands, staying home when sick, continue to be those messages that we started with 2 years ago, and we have additional tools now. So we'll continue to provide that messaging. Clinics can continue to be requested. There is a request to clinic form at the health department. And while the changes have happened around masking, many of the other things still continue to be in place. I think those are kind of the highlights at this point. I do know that if there's questions about school districts, we did meet with them earlier this week. Tomorrow, the mask mandate within school districts has been announced, and they just received guidance this afternoon, which will help them prepare for all the questions they will receive. So mask mandates across the state have been lifted.
Thank you, Amy. Any questions for Amy Hendricks? Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Amy for answering the question that one of my constituent businesses had. And so I'm just going to repeat what the question was here in case other folks have the same question. It was from a small business owner wondering if they can, that small business can still require folks to wear masks when they enter the business. And the answer was yes, that they could require that. So thank you for answering that, Amy.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any other questions for Amy? Boy, Frank Krupa misses a meeting, and there's only one question. Incredible. Okay, well, thank you very much for presenting on our COVID update. And
thank you all.
Let's see here. I did receive a message from Mike Sigler about the Ukrainian flag. Mike, are you around?
I am around. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Do you want to bring forth your thoughts on our Ukrainian flag situation?
Sure. Sure. If I can get approval on this, I just did a little research. The we do have two flagpoles on the library that are equal height. We also have two staffs at the airport, so the library and the airport, that are of equal height. So if we had the flags, they're 3x5 at the airport. I think they're probably the same at the library. We could actually put those up according to flag protocol. Also, something kind of neat that could actually happen tomorrow is the airport, Josh Nally thinks that we could change the colors of the canopy. Right now it's like red, white, and blue. He thinks we could just change it to the Ukrainian colors if you guys approve that. I think he could turn that around tomorrow morning. Just two things we could do.
I think definitely the canopy colors would be super cool for people coming and going from our airport. What are people's thoughts?
Amen, yes.
Yes.
Mike Lane?
I very much like Mike's suggestions.
Great. I see nods from Dan. Are you okay with this? Okay. People online, are you on board with this? Yes. Okay. Let's do it, Mike. If you could.
All right. I'll get the ball rolling then. All
okay. Right. And I'll touch base with you. I'll be in Syracuse tomorrow, and I think there's a flag store there. And I'll stop by and see if we can get some flags.
Sounds great. Oh, all right. Great.
Thank you for that. Okay, going back to our agenda, County Attorney Bill Troy.
Hello, everybody. I'll be speaking to you during the executive session, and that will be my report. That's agreeable.
Sounds good, Bill. Next, Director of Finance, and I believe Rick is actually away on vacation. We have Drew here for Finance. Hi, Drew.
Yes, Rick was good evening. Thank you, Madam Chair, fellow legislators. I'm pleased to issue a no report from the Finance Division.
Oh, my gosh. That'll make this meeting go by at least 45 minutes quicker. We do miss Rick, though.
Yes, he had employment, actually, so he'll be back in the office. If there's any questions, I'm here and willing to field any.
That's great. Any questions for Drew? Okay, I see none. Thank you.
Thank you.
We do not have any reports from other county staff. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? I see none. Let's move on to our consent agenda. resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. We have some advisory board appointments. From the Government Operations Committee, Historical Commission, Mike Lane. Term expires December 31st, 2024. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Air Services Board, Greg Mezzi, Legislator. Term expires December 31st, 2024. Public Safety Committee, Advisory Board of Indigent Representation, Henry Granison. Term expires December 31st, 2024. Health and Human Services Committee, Recreation Partnership Board, Randy Brown. Term expires December 31st, 2023. Hold 1 second. Greater Ithaca Activities Board. We're not doing that one. Okay. Thank you. Board of Health, Dr. Edward Capel, Physician Representative, term expires December 31st, 2027. Sue Merkel, At-Large Representative, term expires December 31st, 2027. County Office for the Aging Advisory Board, Patricia Jung, Ulysses Representative, term expires December 31st, 2023. Lori J. Holtberg, McGraw-House Representative, term expires December 31st, 2023. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Southern Tier 8 Regional Board, Greg Mezzi, Legislator, term expires December 31st, 2025. Agricultural and Farmland Protection Board, Randy Brown, Legislator, term expires December 31st, 2025. Planning Advisory Board, Ann Corman, Legislator, Legislature Planning Committee Chair or Designee, term expires December 31st, 2024. Water Resources Council, Amanda Champion, term expires December 31st, 2022. Soil and Water Conservation District, John Neely, Soil and Water, Randy Brown, Legislator, term expires December 31st, 2022. Deborah Dawson, Legislator, term expires December 31st, 2022. Water Resources Council, Jenna DeRario, Cornell Cooperative Extension Representative, term expires December 31st, 2023. Environmental Management Council, Richard Neville, Senior, Village of Groton Representative, term expires December 31st, 2023. On to our resolutions. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution A, authorization to disperse additional county funds to the Community Housing Development Fund for Northside Apartments, ID 10700, resolution.
Jenna, that resolution came out of...
Right, and that's fine. It's all on the consent agenda. So okay. just for clarification purposes, that resolution actually came out of HHS and not PDEC. And it was passed in HHS. So we'll just keep it as Resolution A for clarification and to keep it simple. Resolution B, authorization to enter into an agreement with the Cuyahoga Lake Watershed Intermunicipal Organization for 2022 through 2026, ID 10742. Public Safety Committee, Resolution C, authorization to accept an award of a grant from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, Probation and Community Justice Department, ID 10670. Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution D, budget adjustment, Social Services and Youth Services, Safe Harbor, ID 10694. Resolution E, budget adjustment, Project Pause for Parkinson's Disease, Tompkins County Office for the Aging, ID 10685. Resolution F, budget adjustment, Tompkins County Office for the Aging, CARES, HDC 5 grant, ID 10686. Can I have a mover, please? Moved by Deborah, seconded by Veronica. And let's do a roll call.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Now it's time for standing and special committees. First and foremost is our government, boy, unbelievable. The Government Operations Committee, Chair is Amanda Champion.
Thank you. Government Operations Committee will be meeting on Thursday, 2 days from now at noon. We have a couple of resolutions on the agenda. We'll be getting a report from our county historian telling us what she's up to this year. Board of Elections has a couple of resolutions, and hopefully they will also give us a bit of a update on how things are going for them. Petitioning for all the elections this fall is open today. So, it's kind of a smaller agenda, and everyone is welcome. Thanks.
Thank you, Amanda. Next is Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Chair Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our first committee meeting of the year was yesterday, and we had a lively discussion on many topics, including the committee goals. We had many advisory board appointments. We had some discussion on work plans for the various departments, and including going back to the committee goals, one of the things that I brought up is I believe that for our committee, one of the biggest things that we can do is support the various departments in their work plans. Then I also want to say and welcome Rosemary Avila as the new director of our workforce department. And we have two resolutions. Let me start with one.
Sure.
Okay. The first one is on packet page 19, resolution G, support for New York State Legislature to establish an extended producer responsibility system for packaging and printed paper. It's ID 10748, and I'll move that.
If I could have a seconder. So many choices. Amanda Champion.
Okay, thank you. And Deborah Dawson did extensive work and helped and wrote this up with some help from Barb Ekstrom. So I'd like Deborah to talk us through this one.
Thanks, Annie. Is that all right, Madam Chair?
Great.
Oh, Dean.
Oh. Hey, Barb.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How's it going?
Good. I'm trying to find myself here.
Aren't we all?
We see you.
You do?
You're in little letters.
All right. Now I'm here.
Welcome.
Thank you. I didn't hear you before. It was muffled.
Well, we have the resolution on the floor. Would you like to give us some background and talk to the resolution?
Sure. We discussed this very thoroughly at the committee. As you know, I've been involved with this issue for about 5 years. I serve on the New York State Product Stewardship Council, we've been, working very hard to develop this. The most important thing here is that we've seen a rapid increase in the cost of recycling over the last year with the negotiation. And the truth is, the heroes are not the operators, the private operators, or the producers. And it's now time in this state for the opportunity to arise for the producers to take responsibility for helping to defray the cost of recycling, creating different packaging, less plastic and, more sustainable packaging into the future. And I think the governor is ready to do that. I think there was some prevention of this with the former governor. And there's many municipalities that are taking this exact action. I think what's also going to happen is there's going to be citizen groups that are going to wind up being more involved, environmental groups, that are also going to have a mix of suggestions. It's a battle kind of between the environmental issues and the producers taking that responsibility and to find the balance between those. So it's going to be an interesting few months, and I hope that you'll support this and help us to move forward with our recycling program. We've been very stymied in terms of the rate of recycling, the market conditions, all of which can be resolved. This will also be coordinated by the state, so I feel very comfortable that it's very different than some of the other legislation that has not been effective in the country, whereby there was no government authority on this.
Okay, thank you, Barb. Any comments or questions? Deb Dawson and then Mike Lane.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Barbara because she really has taken the lead on this. I want to offer an amendment in the first whereas, which defines packaging and printed paper for the purposes of the rest of the resolution and for the discussion of the actual Article 6 proposal in the governor's budget. I wanted to remove the word newsprint because, in fact, the inclusion of newspapers in this proposal in the past has been a real sticking point, and the current Article 6 proposal does not include newspapers.
Thank you. Is that friendly, Amanda, to you as well? Okay. So we'll go forward with the amendment. Thank you, Deborah. Any questions or comments? Okay, I have Mike Lane and then Dan Klein and then Randy.
I, too, want to thank Barbara. I know she has worked very hard on this. It's something we need to do. I'm old enough to remember shopping before bubble packs. I think they're probably one of the most difficult ways of marketing that packagers have and producers. You can't buy one. You've got to buy two or four or 12 or whatever it is. It leads to waste because if people only need one or two of the whatever item it is, they throw the others away. And that means that I suppose the producer makes more money, but it's not good for recycling and our trash collection. So I just want to say that if we could somehow change packaging, and bubble packs is just one example, but we all know how difficult they are to open and how many people have been injured just trying to open a simple bubble pack. It'd be great if we could see a change.
Thank you, Mike. Dan Klein and then Randy Brown.
I'll pass, thank you.
You were going to talk about the injuries as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Randy Brown and then Ann Corman.
I think this is a really important. I think with landfills, we never know how long they're going to last, and we're going to have issues with them in the future. So we've got a plan now. I came from this industry of packaging, and there are schools and colleges that teach packaging. And big corporations, Coca-Cola, Nabisco, Johnson & Johnson, Cargo, all those big ones, they mandate that their suppliers recycle their products. If they don't, they bill them. So they're already doing it, but they're pushing it down to us, what they package and send down. So I think fair is fair, and it needs to happen. So.
Thank you, Randy. Ann Corman?
Two quick things. I just want to also add on to Legislator Brown was saying, and I believe more of what he said at the committee was that the manufacturer, was it Coca-Cola, you said, after they find the producers that were giving them too much packaging, they figured out a way to not have that much to reduce their packaging and to make it recyclable. So
within 2 years, every Coca-Cola facility that bottles products was zero waste.
Wow.
From their own facilities, what they produced. Not what they send downstream.
So it can be done, and then the last thing I just want to add, this has been done in other countries, and the companies are actually sending various products depending on if it's required to have recycling or full life cycle of the product. So they're making two different products already, a lot of these companies. And if they're not required to, that they seems like they probably won't do that. I think Barb had her hand up again.
Barb, would you like to add?
You just mentioned, Dan, what I was going to say. I went to Canada 7 years ago to listen to the environmental product procurement discussions that unfolded there. And all of these companies, like we were talking about, that Randy was talking about, and, you know, Procter & Gamble, Unilever, yeah, they totally different products and packaging in Ontario and in Quebec. And I can't wait to watch this unfold. Now, just make sure you understand it's going to take 2 or 3 years for the PRO, to the product responsibility organization, to form and for many things to happen. The other really good thing about it is, you know, as we look ahead, I mean, we had a really hard time negotiating with Casella, and no other companies even responded to our procurement. And it's going to turn out very good for municipalities, because the ball is not going to be in the hauler slash processor's lap. Their voice will be much smaller, and the prices for markets and the consistency and the expenses are all going to be reduced or made better, depending on what we're talking about. So thank you for the time.
Okay. Lee Shurtleff.
The fourth, whereas the Deborah or Barbara, you've referenced estimated cost to Tompkins County and our recycling system ratepayers of $1.4 million. Is that annually that it's costing us to handle these goods? And with this movement at the state level, will we see that direct benefit in our recycling rate over time?
In a few years, of course. I mean, probably what I think is going to happen is similar than in Ontario County, in Ontario province. They saw a reduction of about 50% in cost. And it really sets us up for some insightful thinking about what we should do next year with the next procurement, and whether or not the county should actually submit a proposal to compete with the private sector, to just the part having to do with operating the facility, not the part of transportation or marketing. So there's all kinds of interesting possibilities.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, I see none. Let's vote. Roll call. Roll call, please.
Henry Granison.
Yes.
Rich John.
Yes.
Dan Klein.
Yes.
Ann Corman.
Yes.
Mike Lane.
Yes.
Greg Mezzi.
Yes.
Veronica Pillar.
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff.
Yes.
Mike Sigler.
Abby Van Lee.
Yes.
Travis Brooks.
Yes.
Randy Brown.
Yes.
Amanda Champion.
Yes.
Deborah Dawson.
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Great. Thank you, Deborah and Barb, for your work on that. Next, Ann Corman.
Yes. On packet page 21, resolution H, this one is calling on Governor Hochul and the New York State Legislature to pass the Birds and Bees Protection Act. And this is ID 10749, and this one, you legislators, if you're here in person, there was information in your mailboxes regarding this, some additional information, and we had Anna Wheeler from the Citizens Campaign for the Environment. She came and spoke at our meeting, the PDEC meeting yesterday, and gave us a lot of background information on this. And you heard her speak tonight at Privilege of the Floor. So I won't go into any more detail unless there's questions on this.
Okay. Thank you, Ann.
So I'll move that one onto the floor.
Okay. Greg Mezzi seconds. And any questions or comments for Ann? or just in general? Randy Brown?
I'd just like to add that Hannah also made a presentation at the Agricultural and Farmland Protection Board, and a few farmers spoke about it. They weren't excited about the legislature putting this forward. They figured that the general regulation should come through the DEC. And particularly one person spoke quite a bit about it. He has a lot of experience with bees, and he had lost about a half of his, I think he had 200 beehives, and he has lost roughly 100 over the last few years. So he's sensitive to that. He just didn't feel that it should come through the legislature channel, and I just wanted to share that. So.
Thank you, Randy. Ann Corman and then Deborah Dawson.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because when Hannah came to me a week or two ago about this, that was one of the requests that I had, mm-hmm. that she speak at to the Ag and Farmland Board, and she came, drove down from Syracuse to do that. And then after that meeting, Hannah and I sat down and went through all of the issues that were brought up. And as Randy said, to me, the most notable one was wanting the DEC to regulate this, and then we found out that the DEC does not regulate seed coatings. So that's the reason, one of the reasons for this legislation. So thank you for bringing that up.
Deborah?
Thank you. I just want to point out, even if they did regulate seed coatings or if they were given the authority to do so, my dealings with the DEC have been disappointing, primarily because it's an agency that is given responsibility for a broad spectrum of really difficult issues, and it is not funded and staffed accordingly, and so they're always behind. I don't see any problem with this being a matter for legislative consideration, and to me, this is a no-brainer. No bees, no food. We starve.
Thanks, Deb. Greg Mezzi, and then Ann, did you also have your hand up? Okay, Greg.
So I just want to thank Hannah for coming to our meeting and to reaching out. I think this is a great example where I knew there was a pollinator problem, right? I wasn't really fully informed about what that is. And, I mean, she really had a thoughtful approach, and she understood the system, and she went and she made the case, and I really appreciate that. And I think it's a great example for others who are passionate about things, right? There's channels and there's methods to inform all of us around the table and the rest of the community and the rest of the state and then our country. So I just think it's a great example, and she did a great job, and it was a totally eye-opening presentation. I know I've talked to many of you about this already. I fully support this because the harm that this is doing long-term, not just to pollinators, but to our water system, and the fact that it's ending up in our bodies. And, I want to thank her for opening my eyes to something that I knew there was a problem of, but I didn't know a lot of the specifics around. So this was a really beneficial process for me, and I hope everybody will support this.
Greg, you're going to have solar panels and an electric car in no time.
They're waiting outside for him.
Trees are waiting for you with open arms.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, I see none. Let's do a roll call.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
No.
No? Mike Sigler?
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
No?
No.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
With 12 ayes, 2 noes.
Thank you. Ann, would you like to add to your report?
Just wanted to say thank you for passing those two resolutions, and that's all I have. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you. Next is Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have not met since our last legislative meeting. The resolution on the agenda dates back to a prior meeting. It is Resolution I, authorizing use of one-time funds from unassigned fund balance for vacation payout to resolve front-loading issue, ID 10726, and I would move that.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Lee Shurtleff. And you did a good job with explaining. Are there any questions or comments? Randy Brown?
I'm just curious how this works, because I just don't know. So this wasn't in the budget, right, because it was coming out of the...
It was going to come out of our ARPA funds that we were using for government operations, but then... Yeah. Then it turned out, when we got the final Treasury Department guidance, that we weren't allowed to use it for that purpose, so we're going to have to take it out of contingent funds.
So it wasn't just, and it wasn't budgeted just because of that, because we just didn't know. So
right.
This will be reduce the unassigned fund balance.
Right.
More than projected. Okay. That's curious.
But this issue's been hanging around for
I'm just curious how it works.
A couple of years, and we really need to get it solved. So thanks.
I understand how it works.
Any questions or comments? Okay, let's do a roll call.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Anything else to report, Deborah?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Next up is Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Chair Henry Grandison.
Yes, we met last Wednesday. We had a very strong meeting. We discussed the strategic diversity planning process. We had a full report from Kay Cheng's booth about the process, about how they really want to stake a claim and really get their foot on the ground in terms of doing things. You'll hear a lot more from us to come. We also had a report about the JEDI process, about how they're coming up with their ideas, which they'll finish. I guess should have finished last week and was sent to us. We also finalized all goals and ideas for the 2020 goals. And we also discussed Deanna's book club meeting, which will be held in March. And we also discussed Ken Clark's mayor co-hosting, which is held the other night.
Great. Any questions or comments for Henry? Okay, I see none. Henry, thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Public Safety Committee. Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Shauna. The Public Safety Committee met on Thursday, February 17th, and we got reports from the various departments that report to Public Safety, but we also had a good discussion about priorities and focuses for 2022, and we will carry that forward. Our next meeting is March 17th at 3 o'clock. And I'd also note our jail population today is 41 with 2 board outs.
Okay. Thank you, Rich. Any questions for Rich John? See none. Thank you. Next is Health and Human Services Committee, Dan Klein, Chair.
Thank you. We met on February 16th, and we got an update about the status of the merger of the public health and mental health departments. So I just wanted to share a little bit of what we learned there. Frank's not here today to correct me, so you'll just have to accept whatever I say. So first of all, the process has been slowed by COVID, right? As you can imagine, they've been a little busy. But some things have happened. So already what's happened is some of the back office stuff, such as billing, electronic health records, HR, website, and fleet management. Coming next are merged financial accounts, which Frank explained to us is not something that we're going to notice from our end when we look at the budget. The budget lines are going to look the same, but there's things happening behind the scenes that will mean that they emerge in a different, in a way that we, that they are not right now. Let's see, they're also going to be working on a new name for the department and branding and logo, so that all kind of goes together. They are contracting with an outside professional agency organization to help them come up with those recommendations. And when they do, those will come before the legislature for approval. And they expect that to happen this year. Part of that's going to require a change in our charter, because some of that information is embedded in the charter. So the charter change is a specific process. It takes a little bit of time, but it's not really complicated. It just takes a little bit of procedural time. Another thing that they're working on that we may see some changes this year have to do with the way youth services are administered from the two departments. They're working on merging those responses. The full integration of all services from the two departments is still a couple of years away. So it's just going to be a gradual step-by-step process. The next meeting of the Health and Human Services Committee is on March 21st, the first full day of spring, at 3 o'clock.
Thank you, Dan. We have questions from Mike Lane and then Amanda Champion.
Hi, Dan. Glad to hear the update on the potential merger here. What are we hearing from the public health and mental health boards on this? Are they satisfied with progress?
I don't have an answer for that. Anyone else at the committee meeting remember that question coming up?
Okay. You can. It's just something I'm curious about.
I will ask.
Amanda?
I just wanted to ask, as well as make sure that if the consultant's coming in to help with the rebranding and renaming, will Dominic have a part of that, since he has put together a branding and, you know, Tompkins County logo sort of guidelines? I would hope that he would be a part of that.
Yeah, I'm on the cross-functional team with the identity integration, and that document will be provided with to the consultant upon their starting. So thanks.
Okay.
Appreciate bringing
all
it
right,
up.
All right, great.
Great. Any other questions for Dan Klein? I see none. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Okay. Last but certainly not least is the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Michael Lane, Chair.
Thank you. Certainly not least.
Certainly not.
The committee met on February 17th, and we worked on goals, but the largest part of our discussions had to do with questions about future things that are going to be coming down the pike that we've really got to get a handle on. One is our downtown facilities, the possibility of building of a new building or consolidating our various departments and those kinds of things. And the Downtown Facilities Committee has, from last year, doesn't exist, so that effort has to be done through our facilities. We had a discussion about whether we ought to have a subcommittee set up to take this on itself. And there were some folks that thought that might be a good way to go. There were others that said, no, well, let's just do it in the committee, the F&I committee itself. And the one question that I had there, do we have the time to devote to it? And what we ended up with was sort of a compromise. We said, okay, we'll keep it in the committee, but we will schedule some special meetings of the committee itself to tackle the issue of the downtown facilities. Particularly, we need to move forward a space study and take a look at where we are with the space study work that's been done most recently, I think, in 2019. I think it was that Lisa sent us some documents on that. We appreciate that, Lisa. But we want to understand what the current space needs of the county are before we go down the next step of seeing how we meet those with the buildings we have or a new building. The other thing we talked about was the public safety building. And I want to thank our vice chair, Randy Brown, for bringing this forward and asking really good questions about this project, which is in the neighborhood of $4 million to do the repairs to that building. We all know that there's a lot of work that needs to be done up there. And that is in our capital project. So basically, our facilities department has the authority to move ahead with the project. We want to coordinate, of course, with our public safety committee, which is very important here too, but this is a building project, so we will need to be on top of that. I know Randy's been asking questions like exactly what are we doing up there, and we'll be following up on more of that as we go along. So those are the two major things we talked about, and we'll be meeting later this month again.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike Lane? Rich John?
I would just add that in our goals on the public safety side, and I was happy to attend a facilities and infrastructure discussion on this issue, the division, just for the benefit of the other legislators, is that the public safety committee will be looking at functionality of what we want to have at the jail, but not at how to get it built. That will go to F&I. So we're going to need to tag team on this. Is that a fair representation, Mike?
I think that's excellent.
Yeah. High five.
Teamwork. Well, that was a tag.
Any other questions, comments? Okay.
Madam Chair, may I mention something I probably should have mentioned on privilege of the floor?
Absolutely.
And that's about TC3. I just wanted everyone to know that the Board of Trustees out there has been doing an excellent job working toward finding a new president of the college. They had some wonderful applicants. They narrowed it down to four. And I think very soon you'll be hearing who the board has selected as its next president at our college. So stay tuned.
Great. Any questions for Mike? Deborah Dawson?
This is not a question, but since Mike brought TC3 up, I just wanted to remind everyone who had signed up, we will be having a meeting next Monday from 1 to 3 at TC3. This is the joint Cortland and Tompkins County and TC3 group that's going to be reviewing the progress they've made on their workforce development pilot curriculum. So if you signed up for that, remember you've got a meeting on Monday. Thanks.
Go Panthers.
Any other comments? Let me just make sure. Okay. Next, we have the minutes to be approved for the meeting of February 3rd, 2022. Can I have a mover, please? Moved by Ann Corman and a seconder by Amanda Champion. Any questions, comments, changes? I see none. Let's do a roll call.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you very much. Now, if we could go into executive session for purposes of discussing litigation, and we will not be taking action upon our return.
I will be excusing myself and recusing from that executive session.
Thank you. Mike?
I'm going to do the same through the discussion at the last meeting. I realized that I had some potential conflicts with some of the individuals that were named.
Okay, very good. So Lee and Mike will be excused. And if I can have a mover for us to go into executive session. Moved by Randy, seconded by Veronica. Any questions or comments? Okay, let's do a roll call.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Great. Thank you all. And why don't we take a 5-minute break, and we can come back at 7:15.